This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
And good night and welcome to the Doctor's Inn with me, Dr. Dinothra Archer Cartwright, family medicine specialist, consultant at PHA. I want to thank you all for tuning in tonight with us on Guardian Radio 96.9. You can listen to us on the Guardian Radio app as well as on their WhatsApp, their page. So you can try the guardianradio.com. And of course, we're also on Facebook on our page, The Doctor's Inn with me, Dr. D. Archer. So if you're on Facebook and you want to listen in, you can do that tonight. I just want to thank our sponsor, Medical Concierge Services, for all your medical care needs, family medicine needs. So they are on Collins Avenue, and you can give them a call, 326-1521, and check out the website, mcsfamilymedicine.com. As well as the Facebook page and the Instagram page. Thank you all. Thank you all. Thank you all. So we're going to talk again tonight. You know, we do all things health, wellness, and things that pertain to the Bahamian society. And so we wanted to take a break from all the COVID and all the, you know, all the vaccine stuff and really kind of get to like a crisis within a crisis. And so we've always kind of known about all these chronic diseases. And they actually do play a bit of a factor into the pandemic as well. But the underlying crisis that's been with us for quite some time and continues to be a strain on our society is a chronic disease. And so just a little bit of an insert from a report from the IDB. The Bahamas faces critical challenges due to an increase in chronic disease. Overweight and obesity are on the rise among all age groups. In addition, the prevalence is raised blood pressure, glucose, and in more than 13% of people, high blood pressure in 31%. And these chronic diseases are responsible for over 45% of deaths in the country. And some studies, sites even say up to 75%. So we have been dealing with this for quite some time. We've been listed as the sixth most obese country in the world. And we seem to still be dealing with it all this time and haven't made a great change. So I've invited with me today my guest tonight, internist, consultant at PHA, Dr. Amala Black. Are you there, Dr. Black?
Yes, I am, Dr. Archer Cartwright. Thank you for the invitation and good night to everyone. Good night, Bahamas.
Yes, so they listen to us on Guardian Radio as well as we do have viewers online. And so this whole talk about NCDs, what are they really for our listeners? How would you best describe them for people to be able to understand what we're talking about?
So NCD stands for non-communicable disease, and often we call them CNCDs, chronic non-communicable disease. And so this essentially is a term that means it's a disease that's not transmitted directly from one person to the next. So like you say, we're getting away from COVID, which is very easy to catch, you know, and we're talking about hand washing and wearing our masks. NCDs, you cannot get NCDs like diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, obesity from talking, sitting, associating, living with people who have these diseases.
Yeah. in terms of that, with such a high burden, and you are an internist, you work in the hospital, you're going to see a lot of those critical cases that come in. How do you think this burden is playing on our society, and do you see how it affects other aspects of it?
Absolutely. You know, we don't have any up-to-date numbers as in for the last 2 years, but if we look at our numbers from 2003 to the present, diabetes, high blood pressure, obesity is on a constant uptick. And you gave some really good statistics. Our rate of diabetes sits somewhere around 13% right now. That being said, 50% of people with diabetes do not actually know they have diabetes because we don't do routine testing. So, you know, if one were to hazard a guess, our incidence of diabetes is probably as high as 20% or even more. And this contributes to a large majority of the admissions that we see into our healthcare centers and into our tertiary centers and hospitals for complications related to this disease.
I think what it is a lot of people don't, because some of the NCDs can be quite silent, they don't quite understand, you know, why they need to come in and get, you know, get a physical, get checked. You know, what are some of the risk factors and the things that are leading people to actually getting all these NCDs? And I think too, this, we have to also factor in for the Bahamas some bit of a cultural factor, because we are leading in the region and, you know, we're right up the top there with the rest of the world. And I found a really cool statistic we'll talk about later about middle-class income countries.
Yeah, so absolutely. So a lot of these NCDs are driven by obesity. And there are many ways that you can classify obesity. A lot of people would have heard the term BMI, basic metabolic index, or body mass index. And so there are numbers that we use, or we sometimes would use the circumference of the waist. And a study that was done in 2013 actually showed that 70% of young Bahamians, and this would be Bahamians under the age of 20, were actually obese or overweight. So it's starting from a very young age. And when we look at, like you alluded to, some of our cultural behaviors, a lot of it goes back to, yes, there's that family history, but that's only a small part of it. A big part of it is really our lifestyle, what we eat, our level of activity, you know, our cultural belief that babies should be chunky and chubby and cute. And obesity can start from a very young age.
Yeah, my, you know, I just had a baby. He's 6 months. And, you know, I say, you know, everybody loves the fact that he's so chunky, you know. So I always look and I say, he's a little chunky. They love it. It starts really early. I've seen people come in and say, you know, they want the baby to be bigger, but they're really starting to set them up for how they're going to be for the rest of their life, how they look at food, how they treat food. Are we starting early enough in our education, I guess, in a sense?
The answer is probably no. And if we look at some of the information coming out of the Ministry of Health, and a lot of this information I've actually gotten from Dr. Philip Swan, your colleague.
Okay.
There are, like, the healthcare initiative, the Healthcare Coalition, which is an organization that you're probably familiar with, that is one of their mandates, to start as early as possible to try and develop healthy lifestyles in young people, in children. And then through the Cancer Society, there's also the HALT organization. And I believe we've been on your show before talking about HALT, Healthy Lifestyles Team. Yes. Which its mandate is to encourage healthy eating, weight management, you know, drinking more water, getting away from the sugar sweetened beverages to try and develop healthy habits and curb obesity at a young age. So no, we are not doing enough, but more and more we have groups that are coming out that are trying to rectify the problem.
I try to explain people, I think diet is a very big part of it, as well as a bit of course sedentary lifestyle. The Bahamian diet is very rich in carbohydrates, it's very dense. I try to explain sometimes that, you know, this was a diet that people used because they were working very hard. They used to walk everywhere. How do you think we now kind of refocus that in terms of larger and maybe even policy? I don't know if you really like to get into policy. But what should we be doing really to kind of direct people into doing, maybe looking at their food a little bit different? I mean, I love the programs that you're doing. Should there be a national, some type of national thing that ties it all together?
I think so. And so I think that we do need to do a lot more education on what healthy lifestyle means. You know, healthy lifestyle involves changes in the diet. And the magic to changes in the diet is, like you rightly said, eating more vegetables, eating less carbohydrate, making water the drink of choice, becoming more active. And I think we do need to have national programs that break this down bit by bit. This is what you eat. This is how much you should walk every day. This is what your waist should be. This is what your weight should be. These are the things that you should look out for in order to be tested for a chronic non-communicable disease. You know, I think people need more guidelines. I think we do have to have national guidelines that we keep promoting and bombarding the public with that information.
So we know that we don't catch these things. It's not infectious. This is just something that's happening. You hear people always say, well, my family is big boned or whatever. They feel like this is just something, that it's generational. But can they break that cycle of kind of like my whole family was large and so therefore I'm just a large person? What do you say to that?
Right. So, you know, I start off by asking family history questions. You know, does mom, dad, someone have high blood pressure, diabetes? You know, has somebody had a heart attack in the family? Is anybody on dialysis, blind? And often when you delve into the history, in most cases, you are able to elicit that there is a family history of a long-term complication of these non-communicable diseases. And at that point is usually when the bell goes off that they understand that there is a problem. Because until that point, they don't make that connection between the body mass and the waist circumference being obesity. Up until they understand that that is what caused it in the generations before, they think it's just their heritage. Yes, my family is big boned. But, you know, when you explain it from the point of view of, well, your blood pressure today is and you're only 25 years old and this is what it should be and your waist is and we checked your blood sugar and it's higher than it should be, but it's related to the size of your waist, then I think it starts making sense.
Okay, correct. Yeah, I definitely think so. It does take a lot of counseling. And, you know, from a family medicine perspective, we do a lot of that in our clinics. But we tend to see that we get them pretty late. So we usually get them after they've seen you. You are an internist. You know, you are seeing really the complications of all of these things. And so we talked a lot about obesity, but what are some of the other risk factors that can lead people to acquiring an NCD, or a non-communicable disease, and some of the complications that likely will have them end up in hospital?
So, you know, high blood pressure, we often say this is the silent killer, and this is why it's so important for people to check their blood pressure from time to time, especially if they have a family history. Because oftentimes patients will walk around with high blood pressure, and the first time I see them is when they present to hospital with a stroke or a heart attack, which is a long-term complication. You know, and this is not how you want to diagnose high blood pressure, because at that point, the damage is already done. And it's irreversible. But, you know, we've talked about obesity. Being male increases the risk for high blood pressure, smoking. We've talked about, you know, not exercising, a sedentary lifestyle, having too much salt in the diet. You know, these are the things that contribute to these non-communicable diseases.
I don't think people always kind of take in the fact that, you know, their food would lead to something like a stroke or, you know, heart disease. cardiovascular disease is one of our big killers. You know, people, you talked about hypertension being the silent killer, and one of the kind of major factors of persons coming in to hospital with that. What are some of the signs that people might notice if they were having some type of cardiovascular event, or even early kind of indications that something like that might be happening?
Right. So before I answer that question, you know, you said something very interesting earlier, and I just want to go back to that. Sure. But, you know, 75% of deaths in the Bahamas and around the world are related to complications of non-communicable diseases, meaning high blood pressure and diabetes. And so that's not a number to take lightly, because it
means that's a lot.
Most of the deaths that are happening around us is related to some of these diseases that can actually be preventable or manageable. And so somebody who has high blood pressure, not knowing they have high blood pressure, may come in complaining of, you know, shortness of breath on climbing stairs, not able to walk the way they normally would, headaches and they don't know why, chest pain, shortness of breath, not sure why they're having it. Some patients may even complain, you know, walking, going up the stairs, they get pain in the back of the legs, in the calf, in what they would say is the calf muscle that goes away when they rest. These are some of the early warning signs that you're starting to get heart disease that could lead to a bad outcome from a cardiac perspective. And when we say cardiac, it's important that all the diseases that affect the heart affects the brain in the same way, because cardiac refers to damage to blood vessels.
And that's true, because some people can even come in for the first time with a stroke. I saw a very interesting statistic by the CDC, and they were talking, really, they had stratified countries by their wealth. And it was interesting to see that the countries that had the highest incidence of NCDs were actually like the middle income countries. So the very high income countries. And even further, when you look at it in terms of people in the country, you know, the people at the higher end of the income, it's really a smaller factor. And then the middle income countries really had large NCDs. And then there was less actually in the lower income, just a little bit less, possibly just because they don't have access to as much food. But it just shows that, you know, the mixture of quality of food and the access of food, all of those things together have led us to kind of where we are in all of this. Bahamas being a middle income country, we see a lot of fast food. We see a lot of imported franchises that are in the country. I don't see a trend where that a lot of that would change if we don't start very early on. And it is a big part of the projected deaths. And so these aspects of personal behavior and lifestyle, as well as environment, hereditary characteristics, all kind of lead to this condition of health. It's a very complex thing to kind of dive into for the regular Bahamian. So we talked a little bit about hypertension. Let's talk a little bit about diabetes before we go to a quick break. But what are some of the things that we could look for, early signs for diabetes, and persons who might have high risk for diabetes?
So persons who may have high risk for diabetes are people who are overweight. We often use a waist circumference. So that waist circumference for a woman is around 34 inches, and for a man, it's 38 inches. It increases the risk for what we call metabolic syndrome, diabetes, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol. And some of the early signs of diabetes, the patient may find that they may start to lose weight, dryness of the mouth, feeling thirsty more than normal, feeling hungry more than normal, passing urine more often than normal, waking up a lot at night to pass urine, feeling tired, even having blurring of vision or double vision, rashes on the skin, mosquito bites or cuts that take long to heal. These are often some of the early signs of diabetes. Women, for example, may go to their gynecologist or their family practice specialist complaining of what seems to be a yeast infection in the vagina. Those are the big things.
Yeah, and that one, more common than not, is one of the ones that people really come in early for. Some women, you know, they just can't get rid of this yeast infection. And they start to wonder and they come in. And many times it is one of the early indications that they're suffering from diabetes. With diabetes, you know, we talk macro and micro complications. But for the listeners, let's just kind of break down what are some of the complications that can come from diabetes, because a lot of people, you know, if they're feeling well, they, you know, I can get through it. I'll just try and take some CMOS or whatever, and I'll be okay. But after a certain point, their sugar goes up very, very high. What are they coming in hospital for?
So a lot of patients are coming in hospital because the sugars go high. They've gotten very dehydrated. They may even have confusion. Some people will go into a diabetic coma. They may come into hospital because they're having a stroke. They're having a heart attack. You know, they have a cut, a scratch, an ingrown toenail. They buck their toe. It's just not healing. It's turning out. They have an infection. They have a urine infection. They have pneumonia. So people with diabetes, when the sugar is high, the immune system does not work well. And so these people, little infections that most non-diabetic patients would recover from quickly, diabetic patients don't recover. It snowballs. Patient ends up in hospital. And so this is why a diabetic patient, and more so a diabetic patient who's not controlled, is higher risk for ending up in hospital if they were to contract COVID. And this is why a diabetic patient needs to be vaccinated for the coronavirus. I know we said we weren't going to talk about it today, but you might have to see that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I start off with always telling people that first thing, and I think the greatest barrier, is kind of building your immunity and optimizing your health. I think one of the things that we've kind of lost a lot of people in the pandemic in terms of just follow up and different things and not being able to get the type of care that they really need. And you're seeing people coming in later and later, sicker and sicker. I know there's still a lot of stuff going on at the hospital. Is there still a lot of people that are trying to reach out and get that the backup from being able to be seen? Because I think it's important that we get back on the horse of seeing all of these people. How's internal medicine, in terms of, if you can just speak to it, trying to get those people back in who they might have not been able to see? Have you, the challenges that you've had of kind of getting people to stick with doing what they're supposed to be doing?
Yeah, so it's, you know, it's a huge challenge because we're going on 2 years now that people with NCDs have been at home, out of hospital, not seeing their primary care specialist or even their specialty clinics at the hospital. You know, some of them are working from home. They've become more sedentary. They've put on more weight, which speaks to obesity and the complications that go along with it. Diabetes is probably not as controlled because when people are at home, not as active, eating on a different schedule if they were at work, sometimes eating more than they would have eaten if they were at work, we're seeing worsening of the diabetes with these patients not being able to renew medications, to have blood tests, to check and see if their medications are working the way it should the medications be adjusted. And also, you know, having examinations and investigations to determine, you know, do you have complications? Are the complications worsening? To have the feet checked, the eyes checked, check the heart, make sure there isn't any early indication of these chronic diseases. And so we are able to start back seeing patients, but we've started back with telehealth, which is good. It's better than nothing. But, you know, there's some genuine problems with telehealth. Patients don't really have glucometers at home. They don't have blood pressure monitors. They may have them, not know how to use them appropriately. They may not be working well. And in a televisit, you are not able as the physician to examine the patient. So yes, we're using the telehealth, but it's still not ideal. So unfortunately, the longer we are in this pandemic, the patients are out of their follow-up visits, the higher and higher this burden of complication is going to be.
I think you just need to spread it out a bit. I mean, and maybe utilize some other spaces. You know, family medicine, we never closed through the pandemic. We saw patients all the way through. I hope that the other specialties could find some space for you guys, because I do think it's important to be able to see people, treat people, I mean, and examine people. That's a big part of it. And I think culturally, Bahamians, they seem to be better when they're face-to-face with a doctor. They're more truthful. They, you know, you get to see a lot of things that you might miss on a telehealth medicine conference. I've done some of them, and, you know, I like to be there with the patient as much as possible. So hopefully we can do that, where we can spread that out and just kind of get people seen as much as possible. So we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to open the lines, and we're going to talk about what do we need to do to get healthy? What do we need to do to get these chronic disease down? And how do we address that from a broader perspective, if you don't mind, Dr. Black, as well. So we're going to take a break, quick break here on The Doctor's In with me, Dr. D. Archer, and we'll be back in a moment.
Life is always better with a little extra cash. At Solomon's, we know that every penny saved is a penny toward more happy times with those you love. With super savings in every aisle and budget-pleasing buys every time you shop, you can get closer to that family vacation you've been dreaming about. Go on, earn that new air fryer in produce. Snag that Exuma getaway with your cereal. Rawson Square Junkanoo tickets, aisle 7 just restocked. Bring it all together at Solomon's, where you can save more and live better.
Now that your age is not everything, now that your kids call you for advice, now that you can achieve anything you set your mind to, why stop? Nourish your strength and energy with Ensure. Ensure provides protein, antioxidants, key vitamins and minerals to support your immune system. Now that it's your moment to enjoy your vitality, why stop? Your life, your health, your Ensure.
Our free Pick Pack delivery service gives everyone in the Family Islands a chance to shop a variety of club products and prices right from home. Simply call or WhatsApp your order to 242-677-7266 or email order at amlfoods.com. A friendly customer service representative is waiting to pick, pack, and deliver your order to the mailboat of your choice. The options are truly endless, and with membership, you save even more. So order today and let Costrite pick, pack, and deliver right to you.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Doctors In with me, Dr. Dinothra Archer Cartwright, a family medicine specialist. I'm here tonight with Dr. Omala Black. She's an internist. She's a specialist in internal medicine. So she does a bit of clinical, and then she also does a lot of hospital work. So she gets to see the patient in and outside of the hospital, you know, and I've been there too, and I decided to get out of that side of it, so that I can focus on prevention and health. Very interesting statistic from 2016. The population here in the Bahamas was 391,000. Total deaths was 2,400. And premature mortality due to total NCD death was 1,800. So that was quite a large amount of the deaths for that year. And they basically said the risk of premature death between the ages of 30 and 70 by percentage averaged about 15%, with men averaging at about 19% and women at 13%. So just because of those lifestyle, those NCDs, people's lives were shortened because of that. And the NCDs were estimated to account for about 74% of the deaths overall. Now, Dr. Black is here with us. We talked a little bit about hypertension, diabetes, obesity being a risk factor, high blood pressure. We don't talk a lot about, and I didn't mention to you before, but I think maybe if you want to input on this, we don't talk a lot about smoking in the Bahamas because we don't have a lot of smokers, but smoking is a risk factor for a lot of these NCDs. What are your thoughts on that? And do you see that in the patients that you see coming in?
Yes, absolutely. You know, smoking in the Bahamas is probably not as prevalent as in North America, say, but it is a problem. And we see it more in men than women. Every now and then, funny enough, you see it in much older women, which I find interesting.
They're stressed.
But absolutely. So any patient who comes in with diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, where you get that history that they're a smoker, we do encourage them to stop smoking. And yeah, especially in a patient who comes in with a heart attack, you actually would start them on a program to try and get them to stop smoking to prevent another heart attack.
Smoking is, I really kind of find that one interesting because it's hard. People are addicted to cigarettes. It's usually they have to be in a place of mind and a mindset to actually want to quit. Even after they've had something major like a stroke, you find that people are still, some of them are contemplative about that smoking. I guess in hospital is a good place to break that cycle, but you don't really want to be there. I have a few statistics just on, and you're right, of course, men a little bit higher in our country, just around about 20% of those persons. And then women are much lower, somewhere around about 4 or 5%. So, but as they get older, it's a possibility. So women actually in our country are really kind of on track with global goals of with smoking. But our men seem to be on a trajectory where smoking is becoming more prevalent, which is interesting. When we have gone through the break, we said we would talk a little bit about cholesterol. You always hear Bahamas talking about cholesterol. But, you know, can you explain to them exactly what it is and how it plays into all of this?
So, you know, cholesterol on its own really is a problem unless you have a specific high cholesterol condition that you have a family history for. And that does exist, but we're not really going to talk too much about that. And, you know, if you do have that, your physician will talk to you about that. If you are concerned that you have a family history for high cholesterol, oftentimes you would suspected because there would be that history of a young person in the family having a heart attack, and that would trigger you to ask questions of your physician. Generally, we look at the cholesterol numbers. Anything over 200 is considered to be high, but that's the total cholesterol. And when you look at cholesterol, there are other things that you have to factor in. We have the bad cholesterol and we have the good cholesterol. The numbers for the bad cholesterol that we would consider to be appropriate are different depending on whether you are diabetic or hypertensive or have neither. And so, you know, a general guideline is you want the bad cholesterol to be as low as it could possibly be. So you want your bad cholesterol to be as close as possible to 100 or even less if you were diabetic. The good cholesterol, we have different guidelines for a man and a woman. The easiest way to improve your good cholesterol is with lots and lots and lots of vegetables and exercise. And generally, we want our good cholesterol to be over 55. So those are numbers that you would look at. But it's important to bear in mind that we don't just look at numbers. It really depends on, is the patient overweight? Is there a family history of heart disease? Is the patient diabetic, hypertensive? You know, have you had a heart attack or a stroke in the past? All these things help us to determine how aggressive we need to be in managing cholesterol.
Yep, for sure. And so it really plays a part of that whole package of diseases coming together and usually creating increased risks in persons. And we tend to see people coming in with multiple diagnoses all at one time. I mean, Bahamians are fearful, though, of taking medication sometimes, though. They want to try. And I take a very holistic approach where I'm really push lifestyle and stuff. But I try to let people know that after a certain point and your numbers are high and you're not able to make, you would have to go on some medication. Are you seeing a lot of hesitancy or people just not taking their medication being a really big factor in the fact that we're seeing so much death because of all these comorbidities?
So, you know, I think that, you know, you hit the nail on the head. I think a lot of the hesitancy is because we probably don't spend enough time counseling and letting the patients know that in addition to medication, there is a holistic approach. So I think that we should spend more time talking about what other things can be done in addition to taking medications. So I often find that it's a good idea, you know, to ask, what do you eat for breakfast? What do you eat for lunch? What do you eat for dinner? What do you snack on? Do you exercise? What do you do for exercise? How often do you exercise? Measuring the circumference of the waist, you know, and then using that information to say, well, okay, these are some goals that we have. And so let's try and make these goals. And if we don't make these goals with lifestyle change in 3 months, then we have to talk about what we do next. I find the stepwise approach helps the patient to become more engaged in managing their own healthcare and also to feel more empowered.
Yeah, definitely. Because, you know, I was trained with a very patient-centered approach and kind of bringing them in, bringing them to a level where they can understand what's going on with them and the importance, because you do need buy-in for people to be, you know, be able to realize that they have to factor in what they're doing for their lifestyle and how that ends up with different chronic diseases. We're talking about lifestyle now. We always kind of talk about it broadly. What do we want patients to understand about a healthy lifestyle? Because I think, you know, we just say it all the time, you be healthy or whatever. We don't get into the nuance of it. But, you know, when you think healthy lifestyle, what are you thinking for the average patient?
Okay, so for the average patient, you know, you start off with diet. And, you know, some of the basic principles I say is, every single time you eat, make sure there's vegetables on the plate. Make sure that the plate is colorful, even at breakfast time. Half your plate should be vegetables. The magic in all chronic diseases, all non-communicable diseases, is vegetables. Raw, better than cooked vegetables, but even if it's cooked vegetables, that's fine too. Any vegetable. And so, you know, whatever vegetable you like, whatever vegetable is cheap. I like cabbage because cabbage is always available. It's very affordable.
You're Bahamian. That's why you're starting to like that cabbage. Bahamians love cabbage. But we put it in mayonnaise and coleslaw and sugar, though.
Right. I talk about that. And so I talk about that and about, you know, cutting back on the sugar and not using the mayonnaise. And also making what they call, you know, like a non-mayonnaise coleslaw where you're using like apple cider vinegar instead. So, you know, little things like that actually go a long way. So half the plate should be vegetables. One of the first things we need to help patients work on is cutting back on fast food, processed food. And so just making the meals at home, meal preparation, getting organized for the week, writing down, you know, what you might eat for the week, buying things that you could keep in your car, in your purse, in your drawer, that you could snack on, like nuts and unsweetened granola instead of cookies and sugary things.
Okay. Hold 1 second, Dr. Black. We just have a caller. Let's get their question and we can get right back to this. Caller, you're on the air.
Godly days with this doc. You know, why so long with you and your co-host, Dr. Dinotra.
Yes, good night.
What I want to say, right? Why is it that
you're a little unclear. I don't know if you have the background on or whatever, but you're kind of breaking up a little bit. Just see if your radio is on or anything, and then just restart your comment. Yes.
What I'm asking, can you hear me better now?
Yes, much better.
Okay. What I'm asking, why is it that you all don't really teach the Bahamian people the type of fruits and vegetables that has the protein and, you know, the vitamin in which they need, other than using the meat and the bunch of starch. Explain to them where they could get that vitamin in which they need for the body, so they would be using the flour, you know, the rice and stuff, the bunch of starches and the meat and stuff like that, would causing the problem, and the sodas, you know. Show them, and the juices, show them where they can get that type of vitamin from the fresh fruits and vegetables. I think you all would be doing a better job educating the public if you would do that.
Yeah, for sure, caller, and I for sure do that, and I like to start right with our local fruits because that has the most nutrients in it, and then kind of expand to the other fruits out of the food store. So I love seasonal Bahamian fruits. I start right there. But with your diabetics, you're going to have to cut that down a little bit, but, you know, that's a good place to start. So definitely, Dr. Black, if you want to comment on anything,
yeah,
you
said,
I definitely
would tell them,
100% wrong.
What you said?
You're 100% right. And you know, that's what we're talking about. And, you know, like Dr. Archer had asked, you know, a couple minutes ago, should we have like a national program where we're doing a lot of education on lifestyle change and you know, healthy choices? And
yeah, show them what they get. What
you're
they
absolutely
get.
Right.
Yeah, show them the vitamins, what they could get from, mm-hmm. you know, various fruits and vegetables, and explain to them that the meat carries it in a different form, or, you know, stuff like that, and the starch carries it in a different form, you know?
Yeah, absolutely, you know, and that's why we're saying one of the best places to start is to start preparing your own meals at home and not use processed food and fast foods and increase the vegetable intake.
Not only that, see, our vegetables and the juices and stuff in which you get out of getting the cans, and also the meat. Those cans have lead, and a lot of people don't know that.
I think as a country on the whole, we need a policy on health and wellness. I think what I've seen is the new ministry is going to be health and wellness. So hopefully we see a different direction. I'd love to be involved in something like that. And I actually have a project in mind would look specifically at the fruits in this country and how do we kind of look at them in a way, because we always look to fruits that are coming in, but what about what do we have here and how do we quantify that and how do people ingest that? So definitely, caller, I totally believe that. And even growing more local vegetables here, I think is a part of the plan. So I think it's education, health, agriculture, all of those things have to be blended together, and creating the policies will lead people to a healthier way of life. Dr. Black, I don't know if you want to wrap up on this comment before we...
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, and when I talk with patients, one of the things I recommend is, you know, there's the farmer's market on a Saturday on Gladstone Road, there's Bamsey. And, you know, like I say to patients, you can't have in your mind what you want, whatever vegetables and fruits are in season, that's what you have. And that's a way to get fresh fruits and vegetables, and it's also a way to get them very reasonably priced when you're eating what is available. Nothing beats picking something off the tree and eating it right away. So I absolutely agree.
It's nothing like a Bahamian avocado that's, you know, perfectly ripened. I mean, you can taste the difference. You can taste the nutrients and something like that. And so I'm definitely for that. I look forward to seasonal fruits even more so than the stuff in the food store. Apples and oranges, you know, I give me a dilly or a guava, and guavas are like superfoods. Soursops are like superfoods. We don't recognize, you know, what we have in this country in terms of healthy foods that we could be doing. And local people tend to do better if they eat the things that are growing in their surroundings anyway. So, you know, I think pulling that all together is definitely what would help us. just to get back on track, you were talking broadly and then kind of going a little bit fine tune, and he kind of brought us into some of that as well.
Yeah, and so he highlighted what we were talking about, which is the importance of vegetables and fruits. And so he also highlighted all these sugary drinks and juices in the can. So from my perspective, the drink of choice is water. Water, water, water. We don't need to drink fruit juice. Eat the fruit rather than drink the juice. You eat the fruit, you get, you know, the fiber, you know, and like the caller pointed out, the nutrients, the vitamins. And, you know, so these are some of the basic principles that I start with. And amounts are important. The one thing you overdo it on is vegetables, nothing else. That's the only thing you're allowed to overdo it on, vegetables. So you fill up on vegetables.
I say replace the starchy stuff like potatoes and rice with your vegetables, and that's how you start with your plate. Because culturally we are very high starch. You know, we want some rice, we want some potato salad, you want your macaroni. That's just the starter, right? And then you throw a couple. Bahamians want the two meats, and then they throw a little side coleslaw in there, and they're like, vegetables, we're done. And so, taking it from the cultural perspective, I say, you know, replace that starch with your vegetables, and then you're starting your plate off right. Also, the amounts that people
right. Do. And so, you know, it's hard to tell somebody to completely change their diet right off. And so a good place to start is with the amounts. And, you know, so like I say, you know, the rice, the pasta, the bread, the potato salad, the macaroni and cheese, it's all starch. If you want to have all those things, you can, but it must all fit on one quarter of the plate. It's not a whole mound of all of that, and then you put the meat on top. So I find one of the easiest ways to start is to say whatever starch you're eating, cut that in half and increase the vegetables so you're full. When you get to that point, then we start cutting back to where the starch is really just a quarter of the plate. And then when we get to that point, you want to replace your white rice with brown rice. And brown rice is not peas and rice, but the one that's crunchy and, you know, brown and takes longer to cook, that brown rice, whole wheat bread, whole wheat pasta, sweet potatoes. And so those are the starches that you eventually want to get to. And then when I get there, I encourage them to cut out starch for one meal for the day. So one meal for the day, absolutely no starch. And this is for somebody who's diabetic, somebody who's trying to lose weight, somebody who's trying to reduce the size of their waist to try and reverse diabetes, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol, which can be done with diet and lifestyle change.
Oh, definitely. My favorite patient is that one who, I want a healthy patient, but the favorite one to have to, you know, have to kind of guide is like, if you just find out, let's try to get all of that reversed. Let's try to get you be able to manage yourself on just your lifestyle. That's a perfect reversal of things where you can just eat properly and you can get off of some of your medication and, you know, control yourself that way. We have a comment from online. It says, I think our children need to be introduced to vegetables at an early age. Many of the children are only exposed to a few basic vegetables, but they are not consuming enough. I recommend that social services start giving food stamps or something for local vegetables from either farms, Bamsi, Bahamas, BAIC. This will win a win for all. Yes, definitely.
Agreed. Absolutely agree.
To it. Something that I pitched a while back, but I don't know. I hope we get to that point. And I think just before the election, I don't want to talk politics, but it was mentioned about giving kids food. And I've always thought that we should have cafeterias in our public school systems and be able to control how the children eat instead of them just going out. So the question that I got when I brought this up was, you know, it's political and you know, the vendors and all the stuff. Train the vendors. Give them the first chance to be the persons in line at the schools. So then you no one's losing their job. They're actually getting a better job. And we can feed the kids. Are we missing a chance to get to these kids extremely early in the schools? When we have their full attention, we can retrain the way that they look at food. And the kids tend to take that back into their families, because kids, especially in primary school, the teacher says is basically gospel, right? So you know the kids are going to come back and be like, my teacher said this or my teacher said that, and look at the fruits or vegetables that we ate. And also the backyard farming initiative. I don't know if you know much about what's going on with that.
Right. So a couple of things. So remember, like I said, I came on your show with Halt before, yeah, which is Healthy Lifestyles team spearheaded by Dr. Christine Chin. And so that document that you speak about in terms of what should be served in the cafeteria in schools in the Bahamas does exist. As to why it's not followed or policed, I can't answer for that.
They don't have cafeterias, so
there is a document that exists, mm-hmm, that mandates what can and cannot be sold in tuck shops.
Okay.
And so then the other thing too is, one of the things that we did through HALT, even though we only went to certain schools, was not just meet with the teachers who were all on board, and that's where that initiative of Waterfall Wednesdays came from. And through donations from the private and public sector, children were given water bottles that the teachers encouraged them. And the teachers all got on board, and everyone drank water, just water, only water on Wednesdays, no other drinks. We actually had meetings with through the PTA with the parents. And you're absolutely right. The parents would say, well, you know, my child came home and said, the teacher said that I should be eating more vegetables. And the parents were very receptive in being given that information of, well, how can I prepare a meal for my child that's high in vegetables and low in cost? And mm-hmm, so that need is there, and that desire to make a change is there. So we just need to figure out how to fill that gap and how to get that information to this group that needs it. But yes, absolutely, the way to fix the problem is to start very young. So vegetables, yeah, the magic is vegetables.
A variety. Just in case anyone else wants to jump in, I didn't give the numbers, I'm sorry. 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. Just a follow-up to that comment that was online. She says, yes, introduce their palate to vegetables first and they will never turn it away. It's very, very true.
Not to cut you off, but to stick, sure, to that concept, don't introduce them to sugar if you could avoid it, and they won't develop a taste or an addiction to sugar, because sugar is an addiction.
Well, I think what happens, because, you know, when I had my first child, my daughter is now 8, going on 9. I was like a new parent, so I did all the insane stuff, which is I went completely organic, and I had like her little meals prepared and all this stuff like that. And, you know, it was great. And my daughter mostly only drank water, and she's still pretty thin today. But where it starts going awry is those school parties, those kids' parties. And they're looking around, and kids are drinking sodas and juice and all of this kind of stuff. And so you end up start saying, okay, you can have one here, because you don't want to be the mean parent that says, here, drink water. And that's where they pick up the taste. She still drinks a lot of water, but it shows you how like the community has to change with these things, because it becomes very difficult when you're going out into the world. And your kids are, you know, kids are like, hey, you never eat candy? What are you talking about? So as a community, if we could spread that more, I think it'll be extremely, extremely important.
The other thing is, and not to cut you off, is, you know, you set limits. So, you know, you only have soda when you go to a party. And in you educating the parents, it helps the parents to choose better snacks when there is a party, as well as, you know, when you have these school parties, through engagement with the teachers can actually give the parents a list and say, well, if you want to bring snacks for the kids, these are the things that we allow.
Yeah.
You know, those are little places that you could start to try make a change to what children are exposed to or bombarded with. Because if they're all given the same thing, but it's a healthier snack, then it's okay.
For sure. And I think that in itself maybe is a whole program right there, and just retraining the parents on maybe healthier versions or healthier snacks that they can change out. Because I think what it is people just don't know, like, what do I switch a bag of chips out for? What do I do instead of candy? And that in itself could be a whole program. And I think some parental training, probably maybe through the schools and having programs with them and stuff like that, would probably be a good idea. You mentioned something very interesting when you talked about cost. We're an expensive country. We always number six on these lists, right? You're number six in obesity, number six in terms of expense in the world. How limiting do you think cost is for people living healthy? We know if you want organic foods, or back in the day, organic was just pick it off the tree. But if you do go in the food store, that it's more expensive, even if you want something that's just kind of grown without pesticides or, you know, it's somewhat healthy in any way. We seem to tag on additional costs to that when we should probably be doing that. How prohibitive do you think is cost and just people just not being able to live a healthy lifestyle?
It's hugely prohibitive. And I think it's something that we have to take in consideration when we give advice. And so when I go to the food store, I purposely look to see, well, you know, what vegetables are cheap this week? And I try to eat those cheap vegetables because it makes it easier for me to try and figure out, even if it's a vegetable I have never eaten before, well, how do I use this? How do I cook this? So that I could use that information to pass on to somebody else. That being said, you know, going to the farmer's market, getting your vegetables through BAMSI is a huge saving compared to the food store. And then, you know, basic things like brown rice, you know, these things are not that expensive. So it's what the person plans to eat. You know, and like the gentleman said earlier, you know, it's teaching people that you don't have to have protein from your meat. You could get protein from your peas and beans. And dried beans are actually quite inexpensive. And it's just changing the mindset of how we get our nutrition. And like you rightly said, changing that mindset of meat at every meal and two meats on a Sunday, right?
So
it's changing that mindset. And it's even, you know, we didn't talk too much about protein and meat, but that also should not be more than a quarter of the plate. So it's also letting people know that what we eat is also an excessive amount. You know, the meat we eat should be no more, you know, than 3 to 6 ounces or what fits in the palm of your hand. And not the finger.
So no 12-ounce steaks.
12-ounce steak is a family size.
I know, right?
Right. You know, a 12-ounce steak, my husband and I, we have dinner and then there's a little bit left over for steak and eggs the next day. And so, you know, you have to think about it like that. You know, do things that fool the eyes. So, you know, you have a steak, you cut it up in thin strips and you layer it on the plate. So it looks like you're eating a lot more than you think you are. And, you know, those are little tricks that actually work.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's a good idea for people. I think it's these little things that will help people and guide them into being able to do it because, you know, you're thinking that this is a good thing to do, to be having a lot of meat, eating a lot of meat all the time. And I tell people not to cut out meat, but just to cut out the amount of meat because some people do go the other way and then they have some nutritional deficits. But having small portions that you know are properly made up on your plate just gives you that balance. I think the key to it all in terms of nutrition is definitely balance and being able to recognize what that balance is and being consistent with that over time.
And loving vegetables. There's a magic. The magic is loving vegetables.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and before you leave the meat, an important thing with the meat is how you prepare it.
Right.
So, you know, boil, broiled, grilled, not deep fried, not in flour, and then you deep fried because then that adds another layer of carbohydrates onto it.
That's very true. And I think that's what it is sometimes too, because you'll hear people say, well, I only eat white meat. But then like, how are you eating it? Are you eating fried chicken all the time? I've had patients who said that their diet is just fried chicken and fries, you know, and they're like, oh, I'm just eating fried chicken and fries. And that's a constant thing. They don't know that that's incorrect. And they think I'm eating white meat. I'm not eating any red meat. But, you know, that balance is so important. So how you prepare the food, I think it's a really, really good point about that. So just one more time, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, if you want to join in on the conversation with us. We talked about a lot about the foods and cutting out certain things and how to kind of balance that diet. Another big aspect of this is exercise, which I always kind of talk about, and we could all do a lot better with it. But what is a sedentary lifestyle? Like, what is that? And, you know, how do we combat that?
Okay, so before we get there, I just want to say one more thing before we leave diet, because I don't want, you know, the listening audience to go away thinking we're the big bad doctors coming with a stick and taking away the joys of life. And so everything that we talked about, you know, we do that 90% of the time. Yeah. But, you know, the other 10%, you know, you're on vacation, it's a birthday, you went on a cruise. Yes, you could have your soda and your little piece of cheesecake and all the things that you know that's bad for you. But, you know, generally, you know, a way to think about it is you don't need to eat that big piece that they give you, you know, cut it in half, cut it in a quarter, share it with a friend. And so you could still have all these things that you know are not so good for you, but on very rare occasions.
Yeah, absolutely true. Because what happens with some people, if they're totally deprived of these things, and we do like the taste mm-hmm. of these things, you know, our little sugar taste buds are developed very early, is people end up binging and kind of like, you know, doing the opposite where they, you know, it looks like they're eating healthy and then they're kind of diving into the food when the cravings come in and making the situation even worse. Having a lot of rebound weight gain is one of those problems. And so, you know, not the dieting, but the changing of your lifestyle is basically what we need people to understand, which takes time for people to relearn what's good for them, relearn, you know, taste. It's hard to get away from some of the stuff. And so just kind of making that your mainstream and then still being able to enjoy other things, have a little ice cream or whatever once in a while. It's not going to kill anybody. Oh, that's great. So, so exercise.
Right. So generally, you know, you want to be as active as possible for as many days as you can for the week. So we should not be, you know, wake up, get ready for work, drive to work, sit at work all day from 8 to 4, 8 to 5, drive home, cook a meal, sit and eat the meal, watch TV, then it's bed. You don't want that lifestyle. You want, you know, every 2 or 3 hours you've gotten up, you've walked around your desk, touch your toes, arms up in the air, you know, neck rotations. You want to keep exercising your spine, stretching your spine, moving around. But generally, we want to, you know, at least have 20 to 30 minutes of exercise every day. And when we say exercise, we really just mean running, walking, jogging, swimming, cycling. It's not you need to join the gym or go to the gym and lift weights. It's not that type of exercise. And, you know, exercise could be something as simple as, you know, you work in a building with stairs, you work on the third floor, you take the stairs instead of taking the elevator. Your car park at work is a big car park. It's safe. You take your things to work. You put it on after work. You walk around the car park 10 to 15 minutes. You get home. You have to make exercise very easy. If we make exercise complicated, you need to get home, change, get in the car, pick up your friend, go to the gym, drive to Cable Beach to walk. You're not going to do it as often. You could do those things, but think about ways to make exercise very easy in your day. You're taking, you know, your child to ride their bicycle in the park in the evening. You know, you walk around while the child is riding their bicycle rather than sitting on the bleacher waiting and just playing with the phone.
Yeah, definitely. I think those are really good advice on just how to like change that. And so it's not just like, oh, I have to go and do this half an hour, but you talked about breaking it up, being prepared to kind of do it right after you from work, do those little things during the day, walking. One really good thing about when I was working in the hospital and in peds and when I was doing my rotations was the up and down in the hospital, which I do not get now. And I don't think I've replaced all of that, but that would keep me, it'd be like, and I walk fast. So it'd be like, Archie, you're zipping around all over the place. I'd be peds, A&E, all over the place. And that was always pretty good. And I've always been one to not take the elevator. So I found that my week, for me personally, was a lot more controlled when I was just walking around, you know, busy between patients and stuff like that. In the clinic, I'm just like everybody else, trying to find some time to exercise. We sit down a lot to see patients, and I have to look for opportunities to do those things. So I think, you know, those are good ways for people to just kind of add those things to their everyday life and make it so much easier to find the time. Splitting it, like you say, too, like if you can do 15 minutes here and 15 minutes there, because we do set out to like, oh, I'm going to go to the park or I'm going to go to the gym. But we know what happens in between that time of sitting at home and something comes up and all of those things.
And the time changes. That's a good one. The time change.
Yeah. Time change. Oh, doc, time change. I'm sure if I can make that out there. So we have all these things. And that's a reality. And then you have to think about safety and stuff like that, too.
Absolutely.
Gyms here are very expensive. I would say also look for like those outdoor training programs. Sometimes people need to be around a lot of other people. So those outdoor, and I would have thought they would have done pretty well with that, especially during the time there was a lot of lockdown of the gyms, you know, going out in the park and multiple people, you know, space yourself out and get some exercise going and like that and finding interesting ways of doing things at home.
Well, a good tip is, you know, to find a partner. And so if you have a partner who you're accountable to, you know, that you exercise, but you're going to find on days that you really don't feel motivated, your partner is there to motivate you and vice versa. And, you know, don't make it complicated. So when I say exercise, walking. That's all I really mean. And we all have smartphones these days. You don't need any of those fancy smart watches. If you have it, that's wonderful. And nobody leaves, their phone never leaves their side. Your phone can actually track the steps that you're doing every day. And you try and get to 6,000 steps because that is the very minimum. And if you realize at the end of the day, you haven't gotten to 6,000 steps, then you can start thinking, well, how do I get to 6,000 steps? You know, so sometimes I look at my phone and I realize I haven't gotten there. And I start walking up and down in the living room, just trying to make the 6,000 steps. And so if you use that, you're going to find that it motivates you, because that is the minimum that we should all be aiming to do every day. If you are trying to lose weight, well, then that goal goes up to 10,000 steps. So, you know, if you are dieting and you're trying to lose weight, but you're not exercising, you're not making 6,000 steps a day, you're not going to lose the weight at a rate that you would like.
Yeah, I think having that goal in mind is really, really important. I tend to give my patients as well, like a goal in terms of weight loss and try to break it up so that it's small. For a person who's trying to lose weight, what do you recommend for them to be like an early goal? I try to do 5 or 10%. What do you try to tell your patients when they're trying to lose weight?
So, you know, it really is very individualized. And, you know, so for some people, there's very low hanging fruit, like let's just give up sodas. And, you know, some people will tell you they drink 2 or 3 sodas a day. And this was actually confirmed by a study that was done, the STEP study that was done a few years ago, showed that 70% of teenagers admitted to drinking at least 3 sodas a day.
Per day, every day.
And so, you know, those are sometimes the low-hanging fruit. But, you know, where I start with is where the patient is at. So if somebody tells me, you know, they're not exercising at all, I show them how to track their steps using their phone and, you know, say, well, let's see where you're at. And I show them on my phone how I track what I have done and what I have done for the day so far and what number it is. And then I would tell them, well, all I've done so far is I got dressed, I got in my car, I walked in the car park, I came up here to work, and this is how many steps I've done. So it gives you an idea, well, okay, what you just did, that's 1,000. So you see how you can get to 1,000 steps. So it helps you to figure out, well, how am I going to do 3,000 steps today? And so I say just, first of all, start tracking, because until you start tracking, you don't really know where you're at.
Yeah.
When you see where you're at, then your goal is 6,000 steps. So if you realize, well, you really only did 1,200 steps in a whole day, you know you have a problem. You know, try and get to 2,000 steps. You get to 2,000 steps, then you get to 3,000 steps. You get to 3,000 steps, then you try and go to 5. And so, you know, that's kind of how I do it. It's not a fixed number for everyone.
Yeah. I saw some data which was saying that over this pandemic, that the average, well, we don't have it for Bahamians. Hopefully we'll be tracking stuff like that one of these days. The average American gained about 29 pounds over the last year and a half. And I'm assuming because we have a similar lifestyle that we're talking about the same amount. And so with my patients now coming back in quite a bit for their health assessments and annuals and stuff, they're so surprised. Like, they knew they gained a little bit of weight, but they didn't realize the amount of weight that they gained over that period of time. It really kind of sneaks up on you. And so, you know, I find it so important to kind of, yeah, have a starting point and kind of have a goal on where you want to get to.
As well as keeping track of your own numbers, you know, what is my waist size? What is my weight? You know, and one of the things I say, you know, the first warning sign is that the clothes become tight.
Yeah.
And we all fall for, well, I'll just get some new things until I lose the weight. And so one of the ways to try and mitigate that as well is to not buy new things, but force yourself to lose the weight to stay in the clothes that you do have, especially if you know that you need to lose weight.
For sure. And we're all there because it seems like most of us are overweight or obese in the country. So we all got a lot of work to do to get back to where we need to be. So we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We just touch on a little bit of how alcohol kind of pairs into all of this before we kind of wrap everything up, because we're getting close to the end. You know, an hour and a half goes so quickly when we're having fun. So we'll take a quick break on the Doctor's End with me, Dr. D, and we'll be right back with Dr. Black.
Life is always better with a little extra cash. At Solomon's, we know that every penny saved is a penny toward more happy times with those you love. With super savings in every aisle and budget-pleasing buys every time you shop, you can get closer to that family vacation you've been dreaming about. Go on, earn that new air fryer in produce. Snag that Exuma getaway with your cereal. Rawson Square Junkanoo tickets, aisle 7 just restocked. Bring it all together at Solomon's, where you can save more and live better.
Now that your age is not everything, now that your kids call you for advice, now that you can achieve anything you set your mind to, why stop? Nourish your strength and energy with Ensure. Ensure provides protein, antioxidants, key vitamins and minerals to support your immune system. Now that it's your moment to enjoy your vitality, why stop? Your life, your health, your Ensure.
Our free pick, pack, delivery service gives everyone in the Family Islands a chance to shop a variety of club products and prices right from home. Simply call or WhatsApp your order to 242-677-7266 or email order at amlfoods.com. A friendly customer service representative is waiting to pick, pack, and deliver your order to the mailboat of your choice. The options are truly endless, and with membership, you save even more. So order today and let Costrite pick, pack, and deliver right to you.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
We're back on The Doctor Is In with me, Dr. Dinothra Archer-Cartwright, on Guardian Radio 96.9. I have with me my guest, Dr. Amala Black, specialist in internal medicine. We're talking about non-communicable chronic diseases and how they affect the nation and how we can do some things to change those things around so you don't end up in hospital and you don't end up at risk for COVID and all these different things. How do you decrease your risk for ending up with a stroke and a heart attack? And some of these lifestyle changes that you can just start with in order to just be live a healthier life. So I want to also remind, someone reminded me, medical concierge services on Instagram is everything is underscored. So it's medical_concierge_services. People keep on telling me to do that. I always forget to see those things. So there, that's how you find it. So Dr. Black is with me. We went over quite a bit of stuff. You know, we've gone broad and a little bit narrow so that people have a good idea of what we're talking about and how they can now make some of those changes so they could avoid some of those complications that we talked about earlier. I just want to touch on alcohol and how that plays into this chronic disease cycle. You know, I think a lot of people don't realize how much alcohol can be a factor in some of this stuff, especially with diabetes and hypertension and different stuff. Are you seeing a lot of people struggling with alcohol being a part of it? We've got a big chunk of our population that's like, no, I don't drink at all. And then we have a chunk of our population where alcohol is a part of almost their everyday life.
So, you know, unfortunately, yes, alcohol does play a big part. And quite a lot of our patients who get admitted to hospital do admit to excess alcohol use. And what is excess alcohol use? It's more than 2 units a day for a man and more than 1 unit a day for a woman. A unit being 8 ounces of beer, 6 ounces of wine, 2 ounces of spirits, gin, vodka, rum. Alcohol in and of itself is a very high calorie containing food. And so people who use a lot of alcohol will end up overweight, as well as alcohol in and of itself is a risk factor for high blood pressure. So people who drink alcohol are more at risk to becoming somebody who has high blood pressure versus if they didn't drink alcohol. As well as alcohol increases the triglycerides, which is a part of the bad cholesterol in the body. So unfortunately, there is no benefit to alcohol. It is something that we should all be encouraged to cut back or even eliminate from our diet.
Right. And it tends to be hard because I've seen, you know, on the ward, persons who have become addicted to alcohol, and that becomes a part of their problem too, of bringing them in and out of hospital. And then that later has complications on their health. If someone's thinking, you know, maybe I have a problem, what kind of things should they be looking at in terms of, should I be looking at my alcohol content? Because I feel a lot of people don't see the connection, and not until they're sitting in front of you and you say, well, how much are you drinking? They really don't realize that it's a problem because they're able to function. So we have a lot of functional alcoholics in a sense.
Yeah, we do. And actually, it's not until you start talking to the patient about units and what's appropriate that they say, oh, but I drink more than that. And yes, you're right. They can function. But here again is where, you know, what we spoke about earlier, public education programs on, you know, you should not drink alcohol. If you drink alcohol, this is the amount over which it's considered alcohol abuse. You know, people don't actually have that information. And one of the things with alcohol is you have to drink alcohol in excess for many years before you actually start seeing complications related to alcohol. So until people start having issues related with liver dysfunction, cirrhosis, dementia, depression, psychosis, anxiety, obesity, high blood pressure, they don't think that the alcohol is a problem. Unfortunately, if you wait until you start having those issues and decide, well, okay, I'm not going to drink alcohol anymore, especially if we're talking about, you know, cirrhosis and ataxia, which is, yeah, you know, an unsteady gait, at that point, even not using the alcohol, the problem is irreversible. The damage is permanent. It's already done. And so I think it goes back again to, you know, educating people on what they should be doing, what is healthy. And alcohol comes in as part of the diet. You know, is alcohol a healthy part of the diet? And how should we be trying to manage alcohol in the diet?
Yeah, definitely so true. I think it's this, once again, starting with that early education, because by the time a lot of people are adults, they kind of set into this is a normal part of my lifestyle, especially men in our community. I find that a lot of men just see it as a part or like a way of going through life as this is just something that happens. You know, they come together, they're used to drinking every day. They don't really see an issue with it. It really is these late stages of when a disease process is like right in your face that people see it. And I think the ongoing campaigns with that. I remember when I was younger, we used to have a lot of PSAs, you know, a lot of PSAs with different things. You know, I grew up in the don't do drugs era.
They know the drugs.
Right, say no to drugs, so everywhere you go.
Drugs fries your brain.
Yeah, you know, all of this stuff, and the little dog that used to say don't do the drugs and stuff like that, and the little skits with the kids, and someone's like, hey, you want some drugs? And, you know, you don't realize how much of an impact those things make and you know, can change someone's mind or just bring across changing an era where we were actually had like a drug issue in the country in terms of selling and people taking to an era where you have very few young people that were even thinking about drugs. So I think we need to kind of go back to some of that stuff, kind of pinpoint. And we have so many wonderful doctors like yourself and myself and others who can be utilized for that. And that's where I think the national program to kind of really focus hard. I think if anything that this pandemic has taught us is that health is extremely important, and we focus on those things. We're almost kind of done. So can you wrap up for me what you want people to kind of get out of this conversation that we've had, the takeaways that you think are going to be the most important things, Dr. Black?
So I'd just like to highlight that we've talked about chronic non-communicable diseases, and these are diseases that you get as you get older, related to your lifestyle, your weight, your habits, your environment. And so I just want to encourage people, you know, to look at your lifestyle and see where you could make a change. You know, if you think you're overweight, see your doctor, talk with your doctor. You could measure your waist circumference for a woman, 35 inches or less, a man, 38 inches or less. If you're not there, then you do have a problem with obesity and your risk for these chronic diseases goes up. And this is where you should start thinking about, you know, your diet. Am I eating enough vegetables? Every single time you look at your plate, half of it should be vegetables, and your plate should be as colorful as you can make it. Water is the drink of choice. And try and get some exercise in the day. And exercise is just walking. What are your goals? 6,000 steps a day. And so I encourage everyone, you know, to exercise, eat a healthy diet, manage the weight. And of course, you know, I can't leave without saying, let's all get vaccinated so we can end this pandemic.
Well, I have a choice, whichever people would like to do, but definitely try to reduce your risk as much as possible, ladies and gentlemen, because COVID is real and we do want to get out of this pandemic. And so, yeah, go and see your doctor, make that appointment to, you know, get a physical and see where you are so that you can look and see what changes, because you might be early on and you'll be able to reverse some of those things. And, you know, just add years onto your life. We talked about how people are losing years off of their life with these NCDs and how they can go from there. So I really want to thank you, Dr. Black, for coming out and expressing all of that stuff to everybody. I think it's really important at this time when we're seeing, you know, people who haven't been able to get all the care that they needed and they're coming back in, they're very sick. And some people who may not have been aware that they may be at risk for some of these things may just go and get it checked out and find out you know, if there's something wrong, or just continue living a really, really good lifestyle. Yeah, so thank you for coming out tonight. I think everybody would have learned something, or gathered something very interesting from this. And Dr. Black, you're both in private and public practice, of course. So everybody can find Dr. Black. So thank you very much for coming out tonight. We're just about done. All right. So thank you on behalf of Medical Concierge Services and Guardian Radio for listening in. We're here every Tuesday night where we try to talk about these kind of topics that are going to help the Bahamian people to just be healthy and to find wellness, and that will help the Bahamian society. And Dr. Black, shoot me that your listing of stuff for the schools. I really like to see that because I have a big interest in health inside the school. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your contribution and for getting the message out on disease prevention.
Thank you. All right. Good night, everybody. We'll see you next week on The Doctor's In with me, Dr. D. Archer. Good night.